Welcome into the Unnamed MMA Podcast. I'm Adam Abdallah. Along with me, as always, Jordan Sherwood. Follow him on Twitter at WoodOnESPN1000. Get all of his picks at FatJackSports.com. Follow me on Twitter at Adam A. Abdallah. And Jordan, we've been waiting for this one since the end of last year. UFC 311. This one should be a great way to kick off the pay-per-view portion of the UFC in the year 2025.
Yeah, the UFC is starting out with a banger for sure. I think it adds to the fact too that we've, what, 6 weeks removed between fights. I understand we did have a fight card last week, but it wasn't as highlighted as a fight night as we had previously. And yeah, we've got a big time pay-per-view with two title fights and a lot of notable names. And you know what, when you have a fight card that maybe he's not a big time star in a lot of people's minds, but he is the pound for pound number one fighter in the world, that being the UFC lightweight champion Islam Makhachev. There's obviously added excitement to see what he can do if he can continue to be and evolve as that type of fighter.
Absolutely. You've got two great fights here. You've got two belts on the line. You've got names all over this card, whether it's in prelims or the super prelims, whatever you want to call it. And then, of course, the main card. So let's get started here with the main card. Our first fight here, Kevin Holland against Renier de Ritter. This is right now on FanDuel. It's even, minus 110, minus 110. So this is essentially a pick'em right now. Last time we saw Kevin Holland, he had his fight stopped at UFC 306 between him and Roman Dolidze because he had a rib injury in between the first and second round. And then we've got Renier de Ritter, who he's 34, so he's not too old. He's getting up there, but he's not too old. But he's had a decent start as well, so this should be an entertaining fight and a good way to start the first main event card, the main card of 2025.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more interesting from the de Ritter side. You know, de Ritter was a big time free agent signing last year for the UFC. He made his name known in ONE FC, that's an Asian promotion where he was a multi weight class champion. He's a renowned grappler, and then, you know, look, made his UFC debut and made it in impressive fashion. He was thrown in there right away with a guy that we've made a lot of money on, a guy that's been in the UFC forever, and Gerald Meerschaert is always a tough out. And, you know, de Ritter performed well. He got him out of there via submission, and that is what Renier de Ritter does. He goes in there, utilizes size, utilizes his strength, and then goes in there and submits people. 12 of his victories have come, of his 18 wins have come via submission. But now, you know, look, okay, next up in competition, Kevin Holland, another guy, another fighter that has cashed out for us on numerous occasions, has floated between, two different weight classes, just like de Ritter, but smaller. So Holland throughout his career, a welterweight and middleweight. De Ritter throughout his career, a middleweight and light heavyweight. And I think the interesting thing about this fight, both guys very well versed on the ground. Holland, we know what he can do with some chokes. He's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. One of the best shit talkers that we've got in MMA. It's always entertaining to listen to him if the mics pick up on what he's saying. And he's such a fluid striker, very good athlete. And I think even though, you know, we think back to the quick loss that he had against Khamzat Chimaev, but like he has good takedown defense. Like if he wants to keep this fight standing, like he's going to have, I think, an opportunity to do that. I think the question is, will the speed be an advantage for Kevin Holland? I believe it will. Will the resume or the strength of schedule for Kevin Holland be an advantage? I believe it will. And I don't think that de Ritter, you know, what he's going to try and do and dictate those takedowns and get this fight to the ground, where, look, we've seen Kevin Holland get submitted, is going to be there for him as often as maybe it has been in other contests. So this fight, I understand why it's a pick'em. It certainly should, because de Ritter is very, very talented, and he's shown that with his ability to win multiple belts in another division. But I think right now the value would be on Kevin Holland. And actually, if you search some of the other books out there, if you shop around, I've seen a book or two that has Kevin Holland as a betting underdog. And so I might suggest grabbing that, because I just think that the Ritter is kind of like, he's not cerebral with his striking. He's just very predictable. You know, he's got a good overhand left, comes straight forward, is going to try and eat a shot to get this fight to the ground. And I think the fluidity, the footwork, it's a bigger octagon, obviously, with not it being in the apex, is going to cause some advantages for Kevin Holland that maybe aren't there in some other instances.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's reflective in the odds for method of victory here. You've got Holland by knockout at plus 200, De Ritter by points at plus 290, De Ritter by submission at plus 300, Kevin Holland by points at plus 550. Holland by submission plus 950 is interesting, and then the rest of them are not, you know, De Ritter by knockout is 14 to 1.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there definitely is some methodology behind looking at just the traditional under at 2.5.
Okay.
You know, both guys are finishers. Both guys, I think, have methods of victory to win fights. And I think, like, I think Kevin Holland could knock out Renard Ritter. And I think he could maybe lock in a submission. And I definitely believe that Renard Ritter can submit Kevin Holland. So I think that's where I would land with the props. If you don't like the pick 'em, you want maybe Holland via knockout, or probably the most likely finish is De Ritter via submission, because that's what he does. We've seen Kevin Holland get maybe lackadaisical at times, in the octagon, and lose those submissions to like very good grapplers, and you know, obviously Hamzat Chimaev, you know, being one of those guys. De Ritter is certainly another guy that we've talked about before on the podcast. Brendan Allen submitted Kevin Holland via a rear naked choke. That's how Brendan Allen submits guys. So that could be a scenario there. But I think Kevin Holland is likely the play here as we record this on a Wednesday.
All right, our next fight here, Beneil Dariush, Renato Moicano. This should be a very good one, lightweight division. Renato Moicano is the heavy favorite here. Not heavy, I guess. Minus 185, because we've got some heavier ones a little bit later on. Dariush is plus 140, the underdog. Beneil Dariush is 8-2 in his last 10. He's been stopped in the first round in back-to-back fights. You may have heard of these guys before, Jordan. You've heard of all the guys, but maybe people listening. Oliveira and Sarukian. It's not that bad that he lost to those guys, because those are some pretty good names, but they were both in the first round, so he's lost two in a row to some pretty big names. Moicano on the exact opposite of that. He's got a four-fight winning streak. He's 6-0 in the lightweight division, so this should be... There's a reason that Moicano is the favorite here at minus 185 and Dariush the underdog at plus 140.
Yeah, it's recency bias for sure. You know, Beneil Dariush is coming off of those two brutal knockouts, and those were, you know, Charles Oliveira, and that was the fight after Charles Oliveira lost the championship, where many people were saying like, oh, is Charles Oliveira like still the same Charles Oliveira? And that was a statement, going out there and doing something to a guy that was surging. Like the fight before that, Beneil Dariush beats Matheus Gamrot over three rounds, and Dariush showcases his strength, showcases his toughness, his outstanding Brazilian jiu-jitsu, comes from a great camp in King's MMA, and has been doing it for a long time. But he gets stopped by Charles Oliveira, and then follows that up with a knockout to Armin Sarukian. And look, we know how good Armin Sarukian is. He's fighting later on in the night in the championship. So I think the recency bias is like, is Beneil Dariush finally done? Is age catching up with him? He's 35. People think he's older because he's got the salt and pepper hair, and he doesn't talk like a lot of shit at all. Like he talks like a dad, like an old man, you know. But he's only 35. But have the tires, you know, kind of worn off? Because look, we've seen athletic guys explode and knock him out before. The previous loss after he went on this eight fight winning streak, but he lost to Alexander Hernandez, Alexander the Great, when he burst onto the scene in the UFC. So we've seen Dariush succumb to power before. Moicano doesn't really have power, but he's got just this forward pressure, this great Muay Thai, this absolutely crazy toughness. Like, go back and watch, Renato Moicano's fight against Jalen Turner. Like, Jalen Turner knocked him out, walked away, didn't get the knockout, and then Mike Kano bounces back like a madman and finishes Jalen Turner. This is a guy that I think people thought was done, and now he's revitalized his career with four impressive performances against Rydell and Drew Dober and the Turner I mentioned. And then he goes out and he just completely beats the shit out of Benoit Saint-Denis. Like, the doctors had to stop the fight in Paris because Benoit Saint-Denis, you know, would have went out there and probably died because the dude's, he's a Marine or whatever they call themselves in France, a special forces dude. Like, he doesn't care. So Moicano's a madman. I think he's got just the advantage everywhere that this goes. I think maybe the only scenario where I would be siding with Benil Dariush in this respect is if Moicano, like, hunts for the finish, doesn't get it, and then it's a grappling heavy, you know, a lot of grappling, a lot of exertion, a lot of stamina being wasted, and Dariush is able to get on top, get some damage, or maybe get a finish via submission. Both guys, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belts, so love that as well. But I'm biased, too, because Moni Moicano is so great on the microphone. I just want to hear him speak all the time. But I think Moni Moicano is the right play. He's the right price at the favorite. If it trends a little bit further up from $1.84, $1.77 that I'm seeing at these books, I don't love it as much. But I think Moicano is into the parlay, Moicano on the money line.
All right, we'll put Moicano into the parlay and take him on the money line as well. So it's interesting that you say either guy by submission, because those are by far the longest shots of props here. So Moicano by points plus 230, Moicano by knockout plus 390, Dariush by points plus 430, Moicano by submission plus 460, and Dariush by submission plus 950.
Yeah, I think because both guys do have heavy hands, Moicano's got obviously his bread and butter is the Muay Thai, so he's going to look to establish that. And obviously, well, that's how Dariush has been finished his two times in the octagon via strikes. So maybe, you know, people are looking for that, and that's the method of victory. But I just feel like that Moicano, you know, at some point that this surge could end. I mean, he was knocked out in that Jalen Turner fight and then bounce back. So maybe the knockout by Dariush is fine as well. I just wanted to pull up the under. You know, the under at 2.5 is $1.12. So it might be worth a little sprinkle as well, because I think both guys are finishers in some degree. So maybe I'm looking at a little bit of that as well.
All right, our next fight, our last fight here before the two title fights. Both these guys have been light heavyweight champions. Both of them have been knocked out by Alex Bahia, too. Jiří Procházka and Jamal Hill here. Hill is minus 130, the favorite. Procházka, even money at plus 100. Procházka is 14-0 against guys not named Alex Bahia, but 0-2 against guys named Alex Bahia. And the last time we saw Jamal Hill, he got his ass knocked out by said Alex Bahia. So, I mean, we kind of have the common opponent in these two, and they both got their ass kicked. So, and these guys should have, you know, these guys have been scheduled to fight or should have fought each other for title shots. Other things have, you know, come into play for that. So these two guys finally getting, did you see the video of them? I think they were at Raw on Netflix, and they were ringside, and they were ringside, and the camera was on them, and they were like, they weren't looking at each other. They were both just on camera and doing the thing fighters do where they hold up the fist, be like, you know how I hold up the thumbs up? What fighters do is they hold up the fist, you know, like they're going to punch someone. And then you saw Hill, you could read his lips. He goes, should we do like a face off? And Procházka was like, yeah, I guess. And then they just started staring each other down. These guys, I think, like each other. Like, not, there's not like animosity. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's not, like, they don't hate each other. This isn't for a title fight. It's just two guys that should have fought a while ago, and now they're going to finally fight each other because they're both not in contention for a belt right now.
Yeah, these two guys should have fought. Actually, the better video is, if you could find it, it was like Jamal Hill, when he won the UFC light heavyweight title, Jiří Procházka couldn't defend the title because he was hurt. And then, like, he filmed, like, a selfie of himself, like, basically, I should use that. He was, I don't know if he was naked or not. He was definitely shirtless. He was in Siberia, you know, and he like looked at the camera and said, "I'm coming." And then like Jamalho's response was he filmed himself like in Chicago in the winter, like in the same kind of like background. He's like, "Yeah, but where are you at?" You know, they like they weren't in the same areas, but it was just such a great and unbelievable response from Hill to just be creative and do that. Yeah, these guys should have fought before. This is an excellent fight, kind of, you know, almost a title eliminator, if you will. Maybe, you know, I think clearly if Hill wins this fight, he's going to have an opportunity to fight for the championship again. Prohaska, I'm not so sure. The concern I also have with Jury is that he's already talked about and teased going down to middleweight because he is a small, light heavyweight. So he could definitely make the cut. The way that he understands his body and focuses on nutrition, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be able to cut to 185. Jury Prohaska, you know, wants to get into a firefight. Sometimes has very, very leaky defense that has led to both of those knockout losses to Pereira. And I just think that this is a bad, bad matchup for him against Hill. I think Hill's focus on boxing, understanding of footwork, doesn't get himself into firefights, just stays patient out there, is going to be cerebral enough to just land one of those unbelievable, powerful hooks that he has. I talked about this 2 weeks ago on the podcast, I believe, or if it wasn't 2 weeks ago, it was 3 weeks ago. Hill was released as an underdog. I jumped on it at that time. He was at plus 110. He's now at $1.30. I just love Hill in this matchup. I just don't see a scenario where, unless he just gets caught in a firefight, that Jury Prohaska is going to be able to take advantage of that because of the wrestling or anything like that. I think it's an advantage Hill. Power advantage Hill. I just don't see a scenario where Jury Prohaska, and I love Jury, and I love his fights, but I just think that we're going to see another example of him looking up at the stars and Jamal Hill getting his hand raised.
All right, and I think the odds would dictate that in the method of victory here. You've got Hill by knockout plus 185, Hill by points plus 390, and then Hill by submission at 9. These guys aren't submitting each other. I'm not even reading that. Prohaska by knockout at plus 185 and Prohaska by points at plus 650. So the over, the round total is at 1.5, I'm looking at right now. Over 1.5 is the heavy favorite, I guess, minus 160 on over 1.5. But method of victory, both knockouts at plus 185 for each guy.
I mean, it's pretty interesting that the total is where it is because both guys are finishers. Both guys are early finishers. And I think, too, with just Prohaska, the way that he's going to have to win this fight, win any fight, really, he has to put himself in some danger. So I don't want to necessarily play around with the total, but the method of victory, Hill at plus 185. I think, again, Hill just has that unrelenting power, that power that Pereira possesses. And when you're talking about a guy that's got 12 wins, 7 of them have come by knockout. Yes, he did go 5 rounds with Glover Teixeira, but that dude's as tough as a tank. But, you know, finishes against Thiago Santos and Johnny Walker and Jimmy Crute and Ovin St. Preux and Clidson Abreu. I mean, he just finishes guys. So I think Hill's going to get his hand raised and the knockout prop probably worth an investment.
All right, we'll sprinkle a little bit on that knockout. All right, let's get to our title fights here. We just talked about two guys that might not really hate each other. They might just, you know, respect each other. For some reason, like a month and a half ago, Merab Dvashvili was starting stuff with Umar Nurmagomedov for like no reason. And Umar was like, what are you doing? I didn't say anything bad about you, and now we're doing all this trash talking. So it is Merab Dvashvili. He does have the belt against Umar Nurmagomedov. Nurmagomedov, the heavy favorite at minus 330. Dvashvili plus 240. He won the belt from Sean O'Malley, even though Sean O'Malley refuses to acknowledge that. He's now won 11 in a row for Merab Dvashvili, and Nurmagomedov undefeated. He's coming in right now, and he's also 5 years younger. And again, the heavy favorite here, and for some reason doesn't know why there's bad blood between the two of them, because he's just kind of like showing up and doing what, you know, Nurmagomedovs do, where they're just kind of like, I'm just going to be quiet and fight. And Dvashvili has the one been talking all the trash for some reason.
Yeah, look, I think this fight and also the main event are the Spider-Man meme. You know, they point at each other
yeah.
the same, except like Nurmagomedov and Makhachev. So the challenger in the co-main event, champion in the main event is like, is Tom Holland Spider-Man and Murad and Armin Sarukian are Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. The suit's better. Like the, he could do more, but they're the same. They're the same fighter. Like they are like the grappling on both ends. You know, maybe Umar Nurmagomedov is certainly a better striker than Mirab Devishvili, but Mirab, the cardio for days, and it's just such a decisive weapon every single time. And everybody has been talking about Umar Nurmagomedov, and look, he finally got an opportunity to prove himself, and he beat Corey Sandhagen. And look, if you beat Corey Sandhagen, you deserve to fight for championships. It's kind of Corey Sandhagen's the gatekeeper for championship contendership. But outside of that, like, Umar Nurmagomedov is certainly, you have to beat who's in front of you. You do. He hasn't beaten anybody. He has not beaten anybody else. Yes, Hani Barcelos is a tough customer, but he's probably going to be exploited earlier on in the card by Peyton Toibit. Mirab, on the other hand, you know, beat Sean O'Malley, who people were saying going to be a longtime champion. He beat him. He beat Henry Cejudo. He beat Peter Yan. He beat Jose Aldo. He beat Marlon Moraes. You know, he beat John Dodson, you know, when he was coming up. Like, Mirab's known as the machine. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason why. I mean, there's a reason he's called the machine, because he just keeps coming after you. Like, but Mac was telling Apollo Creed about Rocky. The man just keeps coming after you. And we've seen Mirab in deep trouble before and yet survive. So, man, I mean, I'm the more and more I think about this fight, the more and more I'm amped for it, because, like, I feel like I'm going to invest so much and so much emotion and want in Mirab to win the fight, because I love his style and I love how aggressive he is, and he's funny and he's creative on social, and he's just never in like a boring fight. They're always, even though he just grapples everybody. Like,
yeah.
Like how many times did he take Peter Yan down? Like 45 times.
It was a lot of times.
So like everybody that I'm talking to, and or maybe this is why I'm on such the streak that I'm on right now, but everybody's talking about,
we're
like,
not talking about that, Jordan. Well, I glazed right over that at the open. Come on.
That's fine, but that's what you do. I mean, look, it's the reality of the nature of the beast, but like
2025 starts this weekend. Okay. That was just a warm up.
Perhaps, but like everybody's talking about, like, how's Mirab going to handle Umar Nurmagomedov stand up and then eventual grappling? Like how is Umar going to handle Mirab's fucking grappling? Like,
yeah.
Come on. So I think that this price, I think, is out of whack. I do. I think this price is definitely out of whack for me. So at this point, where it's at right now, Mirab's a plus, what is he now? Plus 240,
yeah.
Plus 240?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on Mirab until that price on Umar comes down. Yeah, dogs are barking, man. Look, Mirab's not like a special talent. Like Islam Makhachev is a special talent.
Yeah.
Like that dude, like you tell me if we're doing a wrap up show in 2028 and Islam's the champion at lightweight, I'm not going to be surprised at all. But I feel like people are sleeping on Mirab. I think people are, you got to remember the fact that, like, a lot of people in the industry and the sport believe he would have been the champion at 135 earlier on in his career, but out of respect for his brother, his teammate, Aljamain Sterling, he just kept knocking off contenders and not fighting for the championship until O'Malley was the champion and not Aljamain. So give me Mirab straight up on the money line at those prices right now. Because, look, too, if you look at it, right, the odds makers think that this fight is going to decision.
Yeah, if you look at the method of victory, Nurmagomedov by points, -110, and Devashvili by points, +360. So yeah, you're getting a little more value on Mirab by points. But again, the next two are by submission, where these guys could do that. So you just take the +240 on the money line with Mirab.
Yeah, and look, I think, and there's also a little bit of a rumor too. He disclosed a little bit of it, that Umar like had a little bit of an injury that made him unsure if he was going to book this fight or not. And then, you know, look, there was the fact that like Mirab, the storyline about Mirab was like he didn't want to take the fight. He wanted a little bit more time off, but then he was forced to take the fight, and maybe that's, you know, putting into the odds a little bit more favoritism on Umar Nurmagomedov. But I think, yeah, it's a lot of comedy. I don't think people like Barab. I think, you know, there's people that dislike him and that Aljamain Sterling combination. Maybe people are looking at the last name and saying, oh, Nurmagomedov, I know that name, and I'm going to hammer that back, you know, that line as well. So it's Barab for me at the price, and maybe a small sprinkle on the decision prop, because that gets a little bit more value too.
All right, our main event here, another title fight, lightweight championship. The title holder, Islam Makhachev, minus 430, the very heavy favorite. Actually, that's come down a little bit. It's minus 400 now for Islam Makhachev. And then Armin Sarukian, plus 300. This is a rematch. They fought about 5 years ago, more than 5 years ago. And since then, Makhachev has 14 in a row. Sarukian has gone 9-1 in that initial meeting. And you sent this to me earlier this week that Sarukian has always been a dude that is like very muscular, you know, like I've always looked at the Nurmagomedovs and like the Makhachevs and like all those grapplers that come in like that. And I'm not saying they're not strong. They're muscular, but they're all kind of like doughy. Do you know what I mean? They just kind of look a little doughy. Like they're not. I'm not saying they're out of shape. They're obviously the best fighters in the world. The best UFC fighter ever had a little bit of dough on him, and that's fine, right? So if we look at Armin Sarukian, has always been extremely muscular. Always had the six pack. Always had the big shoulders. But right now, this dude is fucking cut. This dude is absolutely. Like I don't know if it's because they got rid of the testing in UFC. I'm not making any claims, but this dude is absolutely shredded right now.
Yeah, he is absolutely ripped. And you know, I think both of these guys, when they fought, it was a late replacement. It was Armin Sarukian's UFC debut on short notice, and he took he gave everything to Islam Makhachev in that 3-round fight and lost via decision, but looked probably, you know, he looked unbelievable doing it. Then went on to win 6 fights in a row, lost to Gamrot, and now has won 4 fights in a row, including the victory over Charles Oliveira to get to this spot. He just comes with great grappling and constant top game pressure, evolving striking. It's not the best. He comes from a good camp, American Top Team, so he's going to be prepared and ready to go. He's the younger fighter, 28 years of age, compared to Makhachev, who's 31. But you're right, Makhachev, doughy, whatever. He's got the old man strength, whatever. He's got the Nurmagomedov, gene. Mm-hmm. Got the gene. Not Umar Nurmagomedov.
Makhachev has the gene that Nurmagomedov wants. Yeah,
right. Exactly. So, and he's evolving as a striker. And I think that the odds are correct in this. I think, yes, we understand how good Armin Sarukian is by how they fought and how he's fought and his top game and his grappling. But Makhachev is just on another absolute level and never is seemingly in danger. When you thought he might have been in danger against Charles Oliveira, he wasn't. Went out and submitted him. Then he, you know, look, welcomes the challenge against one of the best fighters we've considered of all time, and Volkanovski, goes 5 rounds, takes the rematch, knocks him out in the first round. Mm-hmm. So, and then, you know, tries to put Dustin Poirier out to pasture. We'll get DP's one more fight, which I'm excited about. One of the things I'm excited about for 25. Mm-hmm. But I think the lines are accurate with Islam Makhachev, and not only are they accurate, I think that we're going to get a finish. I think Makhachev's going to win this fight inside the distance. Oof. That's going to put it at plus money instead of the $3 we got to lay on him, or $4 we have to lay on him as the favorite. So I think he goes out there and he finishes Armin Sarukian in pretty decisive fashion, I would say.
All right, then our method of victory here, Makhachev by points, plus 105. Makhachev by submission, plus 380. Sarukian by points, plus 500. Makhachev by knockout, plus 600. Sarukian by knockout, plus 850.
Yeah, I just give me the inside the distance, because you know, Makhachev is equal opportunist. So plus 150, I'm
plus
seeing.
Plus 150, okay.
In some spots, yeah.
All right.
So I like him, you know, in that spot, and he could also happily go into our parlay with Moicano and Hill.
Okay, so we're putting Hill in the parlay too.
It's not the lock of the night, but like right. I just love the matchup.
Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. Anything? Like we said, this fight card is stacked. Anything prelim wise you're looking at, whether picks or to put in the parlay?
So, well, we're not gonna get any love with I mentioned him putting Peyton Talbot against Hani Barcelos because he's a -1600 favorite.
Yeah, 1400 so right now. Let's see. I want to see if it changes anything. A little bit.
There's no one else. I'm looking at, look, and I talked about this last week on the show. There's no one else from a favorite standpoint that I feel comfortable putting in there. The odds are too great.
Okay.
70% or 70.2% of favorites won last year. And that trend,
it's like the NFL this year. Jesus.
Yeah. But that trend dipped a little bit. I think favorites were 9-5 last week.
Okay.
So whatever those that percentage is, but there's a couple of dogs that I'm particularly looking at too. So we've talked about one of them before, the polar bear Sergei Spivak.
Yeah,
I think those odds are
plus 310 right there.
Yeah, against Jalton Almeida, that I don't think that those odds are accurate. And Grant Dawson is, in my mind, is too big of a favorite against Diego Ferreira. The only thing, I guess, does Diego tire out because of the age gap and the constant grappling? But, you know, I still have in the back of my mind the 30-second knockout that Grant Dawson suffered against Bobby Green, and Ferreira's got power and power for days. So there's no one else. So let's just do three legs there on the
I added Talbot just for because it brings it up like another couple cents here. So
okay.
I did Moicano, Makhachev, Hill, and Talbot, and that pays +265.
Okay.
So that is our parlay right there. Our picks: Holland money line -110, Moicano money line, and also the under in that fight. Hill money line and a little bit of sprinkle on Hill by knockout at +185. Merab +240, and if you want to get nuts, +360 by points there. And then Makhachev inside the distance at +150. And your prop of the night is going to be Jamahal Hill by knockout. +185.
All right, you and I are on the same page.
We are. I feel like we had bad vibes last week, so good vibes. We're both on the same page.
Well, I like that. I like it when you and I are siding together on these type of things. I don't like going up against each other.
Yeah,
it's
not fun. I wanted to bring something to your attention real quick. ESPN put out a ranking. Now, this isn't who they think is the top 50. Okay, this is who they think will have the best 2025. In MMA this year. All right. And I think that right now they have number one is Tom Aspinall.
That's correct.
And yep, the reason
I'm looking at it right now as
well. Yeah. So you agree with that he might not, he's not the best fighter, but he's got the best fight this year because he's going to fight John Jones.
Like, yeah. I mean, the way I looked at it, like, which fighter will have the best 2025? So
yeah,
he needs to be number one, because he has the opportunity for the biggest fight on the calendar. And that is a UFC heavyweight championship fight. It's the most prestigious title we have in our sport against the greatest fighter of all time in John Jones in likely his retirement fight. So, yes, Tom Aspinall needs to be number one because there's no one else that John Jones is going to face. Although I guess I could argue that Alex Pereira, who's number two on this list, deserves to be right there because Alex is going to have a light heavyweight championship fight likely against Magomed Ankalaev.
Yeah.
And then he's going to have an opportunity to do something that we've never seen before in the UFC, win a belt in three different weight classes, and get a shot at the UFC. I actually like this list. I think, you know, I'm talking about it and then reading it live. Like Ilia Topuria
at number three. Yeah, that's a good spot.
I'm going to flip someone up ahead of him. But yes, if he does what he says he's going to do, and that is just give up defending the featherweight championship and go up in lightweight, then and fight Makhachev, like that fight will be great and sick. The one that I'm going to jump up in front of several people is the one that's at number seven. going women, that's Kayla Harrison.
Yeah.
Kayla Harrison should fight for the championship next against Juliana Pena.
That's crazy because she, like, didn't she just made her debut, right?
She just made, well, her previous rank was 50.
Yeah.
And now she's 7.
Yeah.
Like, if she fights Juliana Pena, I believe she'll win that fight. And then if she coaxes Amanda Nunes out of retirement to fight her, then Kayla deserves to be number 4.
Yeah, I think that's great. I put I like where I question where Chimaev is a little bit at number 4, just because, like, he's been so off and on with fighting,
right?
You know, so I hope that he's there. I hope we get to see him fight. He's a very exciting fighter. When he does, he fits in that doughy category a little bit.
Yeah.
But he's undefeated, and you want to see him fight again. And again, we've, you know, middleweight is it should be a very competitive class this year.
Yes, it is. And look, we've got a big fight next week with Adesanya fighting. Chimaev is rumored to be next for the title fight between Dricus du Plessis and Sean Strickland.
Mm-hmm.
He's got, you know, animosity with both of those guys. So, yeah, I mean, but again, I don't like him as high because, as you just alluded to, the inconsistent nature of his current UFC career. But apparently he's trying to figure out a way to be able to fight in the States. Apparently he's healthy now.
Yeah.
And would love to see him perform. And, oh, by the way, the disrespect continues. We have to go all the way down to
all the way.
6.
Well, I understand. They think he's going to lose. And it's like, okay, fine. Well, make Bilal an underdog again.
Yeah.
And I'll still bet on him because he's cashed. How many times in a row since we've been doing this podcast has Bilal Muhammad cashed as an underdog? Every single time. Every
too many times.
The answer is every single time. Because he's won every single time. So I'm going to keep betting on him, and that's fine. Friend of the program, that's good. But I think if you look at this, it's going to be the year of Tom Aspinall, and it's going to be the year of Alex Pereira, and it's also going to be probably the retirement year of John Jones. So there's a lot of stuff going on in the UFC. It's going to be great. Thank you for listening. He's Jordan Sherwood. Follow him on Twitter at WoodOnESPN1000. I'm Adam Abdallah. Follow me on Twitter at Adam A. Abdallah. Get all of Jordan's picks, FatJackSports.com. You've got the NFL playoffs going on, NBA. You've got a title game for the College Football National Championship coming up on Monday. So make sure you check that out as well, FatJackSports.com. Like I said, he's Jordan Sherwood. I'm Adam Abdallah. Thanks for listening to the Unnamed MMA Podcast.